We're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 13, verses 24 to 42. 24 to 42. We'll finish Chapter 13. The Hans Avatar answers questions. What do you remember from the last class? Yes, copy it. We should not be attached to the mode of goodness. Huh? We should use it to serve. Okay? Yes. Yes? Religious principles. Mm-hmm. Okay? How can we separate these objects from our consciousness? They come into our mind. Okay? Now let me read this verse. I forgot to sing the verse. This is verse 24. Manasa vachasa dishya krihate nyar apendriyai aham eva namattarya ritibhutya tamandisa. Within this world, whatever is perceived by the mind, speech, eyes, or other senses is me alone and nothing besides me. All of you, please understand this by a straightforward analysis of the facts. Mukam akarati rakshalam bhangam langayate kinim yakipantamaham vande shirunam sunacharyam om jnana timirandasya jnanam sarasarakaya chakshuranitam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha. So what else do you remember? Yes? The summary of all yogic conclusions in verse 14, and what is that? Fix the mind on Krishna. Easy. So we don't need to read the rest of the whole Bhagavatam. We got it. Yes?
There was some discussion on mode of ignorance.
Mode of ignorance and passion.
And why to get rid of those by knowledge.
Yes. By knowledge you can free yourself from the lower modes. Burns to ashes. Yes.
Because the fall down is pride and diversion.
Deviation.
Deviation.
Yeah, this is what Lord Brahma prayed for, protection from pride and from deviation. Birth in the mode of goodness. Mm-hmm. Okay, good. Birth in the mode. We should cultivate birth in the mode of goodness, and that means to take initiation, second birth. To cultivate different things in the mode of goodness. Satwagun. Okay. So, now he answers. First he said, if you think I'm the jiva, you're asking me, who are you? And you think that I'm a jiva, then your question is useless. It's meaningless. And then the next verse he said, well, if you think I'm this body, when you're asking, who are you, then you should ask, who are you? Five, earth, water, air, fire, and ether. And that's also a meaningless question because everyone has a material body, so there would be no difference in the answer of who are you. If we're all one spiritually or if we're all one materially, then there's no meaning to that question. So finally, he says, well, actually, if you think you believe I am the Supreme, actually, what it is me. Whatever you see, it's me. So you're thinking it's the sense objects, but no, it's me. Your problem is with the material sense objects coming into your consciousness, but the problem is you're seeing them as sense objects. Actually, it's me that you're seeing in different forms. So that's what the Hans Avatar is saying now. It's all me. Lord Krishna has already explained, if the sages consider all living entities to be the same, or if they consider a living entity to be the same as his body, then their question, who are you, is inappropriate. Now the Lord refutes the conception he is a supreme God far beyond and different from everything within this world. That he says, I am everything in this world, whatever you see. Modern agnostic philosophers preach that God created the world and then retired or went away. According to them, God has no tangible connection with this world, nor does he interfere in human affairs. Ultimately, they claim God is so great, he cannot be known. Therefore, no one should waste time trying to understand God. To refute such foolish ideas, the Lord here explains that since everything is the expansion of his potency, he is not different from anything. Nothing can exist separately from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Thus, everything shares in the Lord's nature, although some manifestations are superior and others inferior. The Lord is testing the intelligence of the sages by pointing out various contradictions in their questions. Even if the Lord is supreme, he is not different from his creation. Therefore, what is the meaning of the question, "Who are you?" We can clearly see the Lord is paving the way for a deep discussion of spiritual knowledge. So, first he says, why do you think it's all one? We're all one jiva. Then he says, why do you think it's all one body? And then he says, yeah, I'm everything. It is all one. I am everything. So, he's really testing them now. He just keeps saying he's throwing out different philosophies here for the sages. And he only asked one question, who are you? And just that one question, he's throwing out this philosophy after that philosophy after that philosophy, one after the other. So now we go back to the original question. And we're going to get a little bit more clarification in verse 25. My dear sons, the mind has a natural proclivity to enter into the material sense objects. And similarly, the sense objects enter into the mind. But both this material mind and sense objects are merely designations that cover the spirit soul who is part and parcel of me. Okay, so now we have the complete philosophy of Krishna consciousness. That, yes, they do, the mind naturally goes to the sense objects to the mind, but these are just coverings of the reality. You're seeing the coverings. You're just seeing what's covering the soul. And the soul is part of me. So you're just you're not seeing the reality. When you're saying there are these material sense objects and it's going in the mind and then the mind is seeing that and they're connected, you're seeing something, but it's not the truth. It's not the reality. You might be seeing sense objects and mind and these things, but actually the truth is these are just coverings of the reality. You're seeing the coverings. Now you have to look deeper. See what's underneath the coverings, and that's the soul. Spirit soul, who is part and parcel of me. So there is a relationship between the soul and myself. So we go to paragraph 2. Sridhar Swami points out the symptom of the material mind is the tendency to consider oneself to be the ultimate doer and enjoyer. Naturally, one with such a puffed-up mentality is helplessly attracted by the sense objects. So this is the problem, that we, first of all, have this conception, I am the enjoyer. And then we see something, oh, that is for me to enjoy. So it's not for you to enjoy, but you're just putting your mind on it. You're putting what's in your mind, you put on the sense object. So then naturally the sense object's going to go in your mind. Because you're just putting your idea. I mean, two people may see the same thing, and one person will say, oh, this is very nice. And the other person will say, oh, this is to be rejected. Somebody might like tomatoes. And they'll look at the tomatoes and say, oh, yes, this is a sense object. Another person will come and they will see tomatoes and they say, oh, I don't like tomatoes. So it's not the characteristic of the tomatoes that makes it go into your mind. It's your mind that's seeing it, that I am the enjoyer, I am the doer. Therefore, then your mind, project your mind on the tomatoes and say, they will taste very good for me. I should have these tomatoes. I can enjoy. This is a sense object for me. This is very nice. I must enjoy. So this is the mind. But even the mind and the sense objects, they're designations that cover the spirit. So the mind is not you. Even the fact that you're thinking, this is nice for me, even the fact that you're thinking this will make me happy, this is not you. This is a covering of you. This is a covering of the real soul. Naturally, so you're helplessly attracted. One who considers himself to be the doer and enjoyer will be irresistibly attracted to the means for attaining sense gratification and false prestige, namely exploitation of material objects. So then your intelligence gets involved. Above the material mind, however, is intelligence, which can perceive the existence of the eternal spirit soul. So remember what we heard about intelligence in the previous class this morning. It was saying, he was giving instruction how you should use your intelligence to control. Well, how should you use your intelligence? What are some characteristics or qualities you should cultivate in your intelligence? It's before verse 14, I believe. Well, first of all, it starts with 12 and 12 and 13. Yeah, Lila. Let Lila speak. Lila Madhuri. Yes, bring the mind back under control. If you might go into passion and ignorance, but you have to bring your mind back under control. Then there's two qualities the intelligence should have and two that the intelligence should not have. That was verse 13. Person should be attentive and grave and never lazy and morose. So by intelligence, we use our intelligence, we're alert, and we can perceive the soul. It is not possible to separate the material mind from the sense objects because they naturally exist together. So this is a problem, that the material mind and the sense objects have a relationship, a very natural mutual relationship of natural attraction. And that was the original question, how to separate the mind from the sense objects. Not possible here, it says. Therefore, by intelligence, one must realize what one's eternal form is, spirit soul, part and parcel of the Lord, and completely reject the bogus material mentality. So what is the antidote for feeling that I am the enjoyer, I am the doer? What is the antidote to that? Yes?
Dasoham.
Dasoham, very good. Daso, I am servant. So if you're servant, will the servant take those tomatoes to enjoy? No. You'll say, oh, these are Krishna's tomatoes. I should give them to Krishna to enjoy. He will not think this is for me. So this is we have to reverse our mentality. Use our intelligence to understand who we are. And then we can conquer you can separate the material mind from sense objects. One who revives his original spiritual mentality becomes automatically detached from the material attraction. Therefore, one should cultivate knowledge of the falsity of sense gratification. When the mind or senses are attracted to material enjoyment, the superior intelligence must immediately detect such illusion. So that's what verse 12 said. When you get bewildered, when your mind goes for it, when your senses start to go, to become attracted, your intelligence has to bring your mind back. You have to, first of all, you have to notice it. You have to notice. The first thing is to notice, oh, actually, I'm getting carried away here. My senses are getting carried away. My mind is going in the wrong direction. Let me bring it back to Krishna. So first thing we have to detect, it's going, my mind is going. When you chant japa, it's a good exercise, a good practice to notice when your mind goes away. I was doing one japa reform 1 year, and I had a clock next to me, and I would see how long did it take me to figure out that my mind went away. Or how long did it take for my mind to go away? Actually, that's what I was doing. How long did it take? It was always under a minute, usually, that my mind would go somewhere. But then if you practice watching it, then you catch it even before it starts. Catch, stop. Back to the, you know, what I found with that practice was that you stop it before it goes. You start stopping it. You start catching it before it goes. You see it wanting to go, but then you stop it. And then you can stay focused for... You see how long you can stay focused. So that was a really interesting exercise. The intelligence has to bring it back, and that's also a rule for chanting by Sanatana Goswami. to bring the mind back to the chanting mantrarta chintanam by remembering the meaning of the mantra. You can bring the mind back and then remember the meaning of the mantra, Hare Krishna. So that means when you're chanting, then you know what is the meaning. Please engage me in your service, that you're in the mood of service when you're chanting. I'm not enjoying this chanting. I mean, it's not for me. I'm chanting for Krishna. I'm chanting for his pleasure, and I'm his servant, and I'm servant of the holy name. So this is our meditation. When the mind or senses are attracted, the intelligence detects such illusion. In this way, one should purify one's mentality. By devotional service to the Lord, such detachment and intelligence automatically awaken, and by full understanding of one's original spiritual form, one is properly situated in eternal consciousness. So verse 26. A person who has thus achieved me by understanding that he is not different from me realizes that the material mind is lodged within the sense objects because of constant sense gratification, and the material objects are existing prominently within the material mind. Having understood my transcendental nature, he gives up both the material mind and its objects. So this is the realization of a person who has achieved Krishna. When we realize we're a servant of Krishna, then we understand, oh, if my mind goes, it's the material mind, it's not me. I am not this mind, just like I am not this body. I am not this mind. It is not me. Then, who are you? I am servant of Krishna. That is who I am. So let me bring myself back to who I am. Let me be true to myself. In other words, purport. The Lord again states here it is most difficult to separate the material mind from its objects because the material mind, by definition, considers itself to be the doer and enjoyer of everything. So material mind cannot be separated. It's a fact. You can't separate the material mind from the material sense objects. They go together. It must be understood that giving up the material mind does not mean giving up mental activities, Haribo. So the mind will remain even after you give up material sense objects. What will happen? Instead, it means purifying the mind and engaging one's enlightened mentality in devotional service of the Lord. Okay, your mind is your friend, your mind is your enemy as well. Udared atmanatmanam, atmanam manasa. Anyway, whatever, can't remember it. But yes, your mind is your friend, your mind is your enemy. You should deliver yourself by your mind and not degrade yourself. Since time immemorial, the material mind and senses have been in contact with sense objects. Therefore, how is it possible for the material mind to give up its objects, which are the basis of its existence? Interesting. If there were no sense objects, there would be no material mind. The material mind is depending on sense objects. If there were no sense objects, how can it give it up? Because it's the basis of the material mind. The whole basis. This is an interesting sentence here. And not only does the mind reach out to material objects, but also, because of the mind's desires, the material objects cannot remain out of the mind, helplessly entering it every moment. So they go together. Thus, separation between the mind and sense objects is not actually feasible, nor does it serve any purpose. So why try? Okay. Yeah, well, you can think, well, then it's hopeless. If one retains a material mentality, considering oneself to be supreme, one may renounce sense gratification, considering it to be ultimately the cause of unhappiness. But one will not be able to remain on such an artificial platform, nor will such renunciation serve any real purpose. So, what verse in Bhagavad Gita says this? A couple of verses. Yes? Jagat? Paramdishvari. Okay, that's one. Yes, not merely by renouncing. That's in the beginning of the third chapter. I think 5, 6, somewhere around there. Yes, those are two. Those are both good verses. Because we can try to renounce. So the impersonalists, this is what they're trying to do. They're trying to just, okay, I'm not going to think about it. Right. I'm going to stop my mind from thinking about these things. But you cannot stop your material mind from thinking of material sense objects. Not possible. So here it is. Without surrender to the lotus feet of the Lord, mere renunciation cannot take one out of this material world. So you have to surrender. You can't avoid it. Just as the sun's rays are part of the sun, living entities are part of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When the living entity is completely absorbed in his identity as part and parcel of the personality of Godhead, he becomes actually wise and easily gives up the material mind and sense objects. So only one way, surrender to Krishna. The word Madhrupa in this verse indicates absorption of the mind in the form, qualities, pastimes, and associates of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Immersed in such ecstatic meditation, one should render devotional service to the Lord, and this will automatically drive away the influence of sense gratification. So meditate on Krishna as Krishna is advising, think of me. By himself, the living entity does not have the potency to give up his false identification with the material mind and sense objects, but by worshipping the Lord in the mood of being his eternal part and parcel servant, one is infused with the Lord's potency, which easily drives away the darkness of ignorance. So we were discussing that achuta bala, gyanasinam, the sword of knowledge. For the holding the sword of knowledge, you need the power of Balaram, achuta bala, and we cannot do it ourselves. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur has some comments on this verse 26. It is practically seen the objects of senses enter the mind at every moment, as if flowing in a continuous stream. Considering this, how is it possible to detach the mind from thoughts of sense gratification? Such an endeavor appears to be an attempt to deny the mind's very existence. So he says the same thing, you know, if you're not thinking of sense objects, then what is the mind going to do? And that's for people in this world. Such an endeavor appears to be an attempt to deny the mind's very existence. What is required is to engage the objects of the senses in the proper way for the satisfaction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In this way, there will be no harm of sense objects entering the mind because intelligence will dictate they all be used in devotional service and not for personal enjoyment. If you're a pujari, then once you're a pujari, whenever you see a flower, you think, oh wow, that would be so nice to put on Krishna. And if you see somebody taking that flower and smelling it, or putting it in their hair, you think, what a waste of that flower. I've seen it, MVT, you know, some people who stay, you know, outside people, they come, take the flower, put it in their hair. And, oh my God. Krishna didn't get that flower. Anyway, yeah, you just feel that. Oh, this is Krishna's flower. These are his flowers. They should decorate him. They should be used for him. There's no question of artificial renunciation. Say, okay, I'm not going to smell the flower. I know it's beautiful, but I'm not going to look at it. I'm not going to see it. I'm not going to smell it. No, you think, oh, I'll give it to Krishna. Then you think, oh, this flower is from Krishna. I will smell. I will enjoy. The impersonalists, they cannot enjoy because they think, oh, this is Maya. This flower, this world is Maya. In the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, it tells the difference between the Vaishnava sannyasis and the Mayavadi sannyasis, that they think food is Maya, but we take it and we offer it to Krishna and we enjoy prasadam. So this world is Maya for the impersonalists, but for the devotees, it's prasadam. We give it all to Krishna, we give the whole world to Krishna and enjoy prasadam. So then, verse 27, waking, sleeping, and deep sleep are the three functions of the intelligence and are caused by the modes of material nature. The living entity within the body is ascertained to possess characteristics different from these three states and thus remains as a witness to them. Yes, we are the background. Remember what which of the gurus told us that? The sky. We are the background. And this waking, this sleeping, this deep sleep, this is not who we are. This is something else. Living entity within the body is ascertained to possess characteristics different from these three states and thus remains as a witness to them. Purport. Spirit soul actually has nothing to do with the material world, having no permanent or natural relationship with it. Real renunciation means to give up the illusory identification with matter in its subtle and gross forms. Susuptam, or deep sleep, indicates sleeping without any dreams or conscious activity. These three states are described by Lord Krishna as follows. Sattva-jagaranam vidya-rajasa-sapnam-adishe svapam tamasajantas turiyam tisha santatam. One should know that wakefulness is born of the mode of goodness, dreams from the mode of passion, and deep dreamless sleep from the mode of ignorance. The fourth element, pure consciousness, is different from these three and pervades them. So I'm a person who dreams a lot, so really in the mode of passion. And I remember my dreams too, usually. Remember my dreams. The mode of passion. Deep dreamless sleep from the mode of ignorance. The fourth element, pure consciousness, is different from these three and pervades them. Turiya. Real freedom means sakshitvena, or to exist as a witness to the functions of illusion. Such an advantageous position is achieved by the development of Krishna consciousness. So we're hearing a lot of, this is the process of jnana that we're hearing. How do they become transcendental? This is their process. They become a witness, they just watch. They watch the sleeping, the waking. They realize, no, I am actually not this. This is not me. And there was one book Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj wrote, just came to my mind. And he says, we should practice wakeful breathing. Alert. We should be alert when we breathe. Breathe in, breathe out. And he tells the whole thing of how to breathe properly. We should be practice wakeful or alert walking when we walk. We should practice alert or wakeful seeing, how to see the world in relation to Krishna. And then the last thing he said, we should practice wakeful sleeping. So when you're sleeping, you should know what is going on. You should be alert in your dreams, in your sleeping state. This is the fourth level of that. You know, oh, this is not, this is a dream. So in the daytime, it's also a dream. So we should be alert when we are in the dream. Of course, probably most of the time we're in the dream. we should know, we should see also when we wake up in the day, when you really wake up to Krishna consciousness. Oh, this is something I'm doing for Krishna. In this verse, Vishnu Chakravarti has, here Lord Krishna answers the questions. This is verse 27. Sorry, that's not the right one. Actually, the pure spirit soul has no relationship with material sense objects or the materially contaminated mind. So giving up the materially contaminated mind and material sense objects means to give up a misconception. Okay? It's not like we're giving up the sense objects. We're just giving up the idea that these are for my enjoyment. These are for me. These are mine. That is what we give up. That is, it's not, so therefore renunciation, we're not giving up anything. We're just giving up our illusion. Our misconceptions. Renounce our misconceptions. Verse 28, a spirit soul is trapped in the bondage of material intelligence, which awards him constant engagement in the illusory modes of nature. But I am the fourth stage of consciousness beyond wakefulness, dreaming, and deep sleep. Becoming situated in me, the soul should give up the bondage of material consciousness. At that time, the living entity will automatically renounce the material sense objects and material mind. So because we are part of Krishna, if we become situated in Krishna, if we think of Krishna, then we'll go beyond, then we'll be transcendental. We'll go beyond the modes. So the solution is always think of Krishna, as Lord Krishna advised. Purport. Lord Krishna now specifically answers the question that sages originally placed before Lord Brahma. What was that question?
How to
separate the material mind from sense object. Ultimately, the spirit soul has nothing to do with the material sense objects and modes of nature. Just like that chapter on conditioned and liberated. Actually, you're not conditioned and you're not liberated. You have nothing to do with it. You're not, it's the same thing here, same idea, that we're not conditioned, we're not liberated, we're not this mind. So they're trying to convince us that we're not the mind here as well, not just not the body, we're not the mind as well. We're not the mind. But because of one's false identification with the material body, the modes of nature are empowered to engage one in illusory occupations. But if we identify with the material mind, if we say, yes, I am this mind, then we get under the modes. By destroying this false identification with matter, the soul gives up the illusory occupations awarded by the modes of nature. Okay, you are this body, we will give you something to do for your body. We will engage you in serving your body and serving us. It is clearly stated in this verse, the living entity is not empowered to independently free himself from illusion, but must situate himself in Krishna consciousness in full awareness of the Supreme Lord. So simply by knowledge, trying to understand, we cannot free ourselves. Simply by speculation, by knowledge, it's not enough. We have to surrender to Krishna. So this is the point. And Satyaraj analyzes it a little bit more. Here is the answer to the question, how to overcome illusion and conquer the mind. Become situated in me. And answer to the question, who are you? And that was in the last verse. I am the transcendental fourth dimension, the ultimate resting place. So he is the fourth dimension, Krishna. Verse 29, the false ego of the living entity places himself in bondage and awards him exactly the opposite of what he really desires. Therefore, an intelligent person should give up his constant anxiety to enjoy material life and remain situated in the Lord, who is beyond the functions of material consciousness. Okay, so the false ego is placing us in bondage. Our prison in this world is our false ego. We are within the limits of that prison, of our false ego. It's defining our existence, that you are this, and you need this, and you should do this. From time immemorial, our false ego is the closest one to us, and we're listening to our false ego. We're listening very carefully, and we're saying, yes, you are right. I should enjoy, I should do this. False ego is directing us. But when you... So therefore we have constant anxiety to enjoy. So we should just instead, we should listen to Krishna. He's instructing us here. He's saying, think of me. Use your intelligence to bring your mind back on me. And so these are his instructions. His knowledge. He's giving us knowledge also. So how jnanis can become Krishna conscious? They can also do their process, but they should fix their mind in Krishna. So in the purport, Shridhar Swami comments as follows. How does material existence cause the bondage of the living entity? And how can such bondage be given up? Lord explains here by the word ahankara kritam. Because of false ego, one is bound up in the network of illusion. Artha Vyaparyayam indicates, Vipariyayam, that although the living entity desires blissful life, eternity, and knowledge, he adopts procedures that actually cover over his eternal blissful nature and give him exactly the opposite result. So what's an example of somebody doing something in this world and getting the opposite of what he wants? Yes?
Trying to cure some disease.
Yes, with allopathic medicine. Yes. Yes, that's it. That's how it happens to me every time, yeah.
Entering a relationship?
Yeah.
Or cutting a relationship?
Yeah, entering relationship, and you're thinking, yes, this person will do this for me and that for me, and I will be so happy, and then you get in the relationship and you find out, I have to do this and I have to do that for this person, and that person is not going to do what I want. And even if I do something for that person, they're not happy because they want me to do it the way they want me to do it, not the way I want to do it. So it's very frustrating, relationships like that. You get the opposite. Yeah, you're thinking, yes, oh, now I will really be happy. But then you find out that your karma and that other person's karma are different. And you have not only the problem of your karma, you've got the problem of the other person's karma too. You got two people's karma and two people's minds to control instead of just one. Yeah. Scratching the itch. Oh, yeah, that's a good one. Yes, that's scratching the itch. Good.
What about the breaking relationships?
Oh, breaking relationships.
Yeah, sometimes one thinks, oh, if I just get rid of this person, I'll be happy.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it turns out it doesn't make them happy.
Yeah, that's right. You'd think, okay, the solution to my problem is to break this relationship. But then you find out you need relationships. And then you make another one. You think, I don't need relationships. I'll just be okay. But then you get...
Not only that, those relationships may be so deep.
Yeah.
They keep revisiting you.
Yeah, right, right. And you can't get rid of it. You think, I will get rid, but it keeps revisiting. The old relationships keep coming back and they haunt you. Come back to haunt you. Yeah, it's we get the opposite. So here it says, the living entity does not want death and suffering, but these are actually the results of material existence, which is therefore useless for all practical purposes. An intelligent person should contemplate the unhappiness of material life and thus become situated in the transcendental Lord. Yes, I think if we were to go back in time to before we were devotees and think of how our life was and just think, you know, what would it be like if I just went back and lived one day in that life as I was before and think, how would I feel? How would I feel like it? If I just lived one, could we tolerate one day of that life? I don't know.
1 minute.
Or 1 minute of that life before we were devotees. It's like, whoa, very difficult.
Close it.
So we can understand, intelligent person should contemplate the unhappiness of material life. So we can contemplate our life before we came to Krishna, the unhappiness of that, and become situated in the Lord. The word samsara and chintam can be understood as follows. Samsara, or material existence, indicates material intelligence, because material intelligence only occurs because of living entity's false intellectual identification with the material world. So now we're getting, it's not just the mind, it's the material intelligence, it's not just the material intelligence, it's the false ego that's keeping us here. Because of this misidentification, one becomes overwhelmed with samsara chintam, anxiety to enjoy the material world. One should become situated in the Lord and give up such useless anxiety. Verse 30, according to my instructions, one should fix the mind on me alone. If, however, one continues to see many different values and goals in life, rather than seeing everything within me, and although apparently awake, one is actually dreaming due to incomplete knowledge, just as one may dream that one has awakened from a dream. Yes. So at nighttime we sleep and we dream, and then in the morning we wake up, but we're actually dreaming that we're waking up, unless we're connected with Krishna. We're just dreaming, okay, now I woke up, now I'll do everything. But if we're connected with Krishna, then we're actually waking up. And that's a good way to wake up. Just say Krishna, Krishna's name when you first wake up, or a spiritual master, offer obeisances to your spiritual master. Then we actually wake up, because we're waking up to what is our true self. But if we wake up and we don't know who we are, then we're not waking up. We're still in the dream. But one who is not Krishna conscious cannot understand everything is resting within Lord Krishna. Thus it is impossible for him to retire from material sense gratification. One may adopt a particular process of salvation and consider oneself to be saved. Nevertheless, his material conditioning will remain. Thus he will maintain his attachment to the material world. So that person who jumped in the lion's den thought he was saved. But when you told us about, he thought he was really saved and he can just do whatever he wants and the Lord will surely take care of him. But he had a realization, I guess, in the lion's den that no. While one is dreaming, he sometimes imagines he has awakened from a dream and is experiencing normal consciousness. Yes. Similarly, one may consider oneself to be saved, but if he remains absorbed in making material value judgments between good and bad without reference to devotional service to the Supreme Lord, he's understood to be a conditioned soul covered by the illusory identification with matter. So Yes, there is. Yeah, some Christian magazine, Awake, Awake. So yes, we have to wake up, is a fact. So here, Satyaraj, he understands this in a very nice way in regards to different religions. People adhere to a particular religious path, either because of inclination or because they are born into it, but they do not develop a real sense of spirituality. So you're born in it, but you don't really become a spiritual person. You say, I am a Christian, I am a Hindu, I am a Muslim. But then you go and do all your nonsense. They miss the essence of religion, love of God, and become absorbed in superficial rituals and external customs. And so that's another example of someone who is still dreaming. He didn't wake up. Because what's the purpose of religion? To develop love for God. So verse 31, those states of existence that are conceived of as separate from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, no actual existence, although they create a sense of separation from the absolute truth. So when we see this world not in relation to Krishna, or see ourselves not in relation to Krishna, then there is no real actual existence. But one thing is true about it, that we're feeling that Krishna is not here. It's creating a sense of separation from the absolute truth. That's the thing that it's doing. Just as a seer of a dream imagines many different activities and rewards, similarly, because of the sense of an existence separate from the Lord's existence, the living entity falsely performs fruitive activities, thinking them to be the cause of future rewards and destinations. So he's dreaming, if I do this, I will get this. So that's the dream. I will enjoy separately from Krishna. And that is the material dream. Don't bring religion and God in here. I will simply enjoy. Prabhupada Sri Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur comments as follows. Although Lord Krishna, in his form of Hansa avatar, has condemned the intelligence that sees duality and separate values within the material world, the Vedas themselves institute the system of Varnashram Dharma, by which the entire human society is divided into different castes, occupations, and spiritual statuses. So he's saying it's all one, but actually, even his own words, he's saying, oh, there's four different ashrams and varnas. Therefore, how can the Lord recommend one give up one's faith in the Vedic system? The answer is given in this verse as follows. The word anyesham, bhavanam, or of other states of existence refer to the innumerable divisions of false identification with the material body, mind, occupation, and so on. Such identification is illusion, and the material divisions of the Varnashram system are certainly based on this illusion, that I am this body. If you're this body, that means, okay, then you are Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra. But the soul is not like that. Soul is not like that. That's simply the body. The Vedic literatures promise heavenly rewards, such as residence in upper planetary systems, and prescribe the means to acquire such rewards. However, both the rewards and the means for achieving them are ultimately illusion. Since this world is the Lord's creation, one cannot deny its existence is also real, yet the living entity who identifies the creations of this world as belonging to himself is certainly in illusion. Whew. So forget Varnashram, according to this philosophy. Varnashram is illusion. It's based on the body. Yes, my next two classes are going to be on Varnashram, Friday and Saturday. So now I get to say this, but when I come to Friday and Saturday, I'll tell you all the glories of Varnashram Dharma. Bhagavatam is so wonderful. And in between, Bhurijan will talk to you about many things. Mystic powers. Yes, you will hear how to get all the mystic powers from Bhurijan Prabhu. Okay, where are we? The example may be given, horns are real and rabbits are real, but if one imagines a rabbit's horns, that is certainly illusion, though a rabbit's horns may occur in a dream. Similarly, the living entity dreams of a permanent relationship within the material world. One may dream one is feasting on sumptuous sweet rice prepared with milk and sugar, but there is no actual nutritional value in the dream of royal feasting. Anyone dream about having a feast? Yes. Sometimes I dream that and I wake up before I get to eat it. I don't want to go back to sleep. Yeah. Really nice feast. Sri Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur remarks in this regard, just as soon as one forgets the experience of a dream after awakening, similarly a liberated soul in Krishna consciousness does not see anything substantial. And even the most exalted rewards offered by the Vedas, such as promotion to the heavenly planets. Therefore, Lord Krishna advised Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita to remain fixed in self-realization without being defeated by fruitive rituals performed in the name of religion. So today we are not very happy with Varnashram. It's an illusion, it's a dream. But on Friday we will say something else about Varnashram and how you can use it for Krishna. You can use it. You can use everything in this world. If you see Krishna there, then it's not a dream. Then it's good. So this verse here, 31, reminds us of a Chatushloki verse. Anybody know which one? Vitartham na pratiyata na pratiyata chatmani. Tavidadapmino mayam yata vaso yatatma. Yeah, so this whatever you see that has no relationship with me, Krishna says, you should know that is maya, that is illusion. If you see, though, this is maya. Maya means you see something that has no relationship with Krishna. Yeah, this is illusion. Okay? It's your conception. Your conception. False conception, false ego. So whenever you forget your relationship with Krishna, that's maya. That's illusion. And you forget you have some relationship. And that is a product of the illusory energy. Because nothing can exist without Krishna. So if you dovetail everything, Prabhupada says, in relation with Krishna, that is called yoga maya. So if you take the things, if you see them in relation to Krishna, then you're seeing with a vision of yoga maya. And if you're looking at the things and thinking they are separate from Krishna, that is the vision of Mahamaya. So we're talking about our conceptions here, our false conceptions. Verse 32, while awake, the living entity enjoys with all of his senses the fleeting characteristics of the material body and mind. While dreaming, he enjoys similar experiences within the mind. And in deep dreamless sleep, all such experiences merge into ignorance. By remembering and contemplating the succession of wakefulness, dreaming, and deep sleep, the living entity can understand he is one throughout the three stages of consciousness and is transcendental. Thus he becomes the lord of the senses. So this is a way to use your intelligence for cultivating knowledge. This is how the Gyanis think. They analyze, okay, I was awake, then I dreamt, and then I had deep sleep, but I am the same person through all these different levels of consciousness. Therefore I must be different from these things. So the purport, paragraph 1. In verse 30 of this chapter, Lord Krishna stated, one must retire from material duality by the proper means, which the Lord now explained. So he's giving you a method how to use your intelligence. And that's to think how you are different from the three levels of consciousness that you go through every day and every night. So that's how you can use your intelligence to cultivate knowledge and to cultivate detachment. So here it says, one may first consider the three phases of consciousness mentioned above, then understand one's own transcendental position as spirit soul. And now then it goes to expands to your the time period expands from one day to your life. One experiences childhood, boyhood, adolescence, adulthood, middle age, and old age, and throughout these phases one is experiencing things while awake and while dreaming. Similarly, one may by careful intelligence understand one's lack of consciousness during deep sleep. And thus, through intelligence, one may have experience of lack of consciousness. Lack of consciousness through intelligence. I experienced deep sleep under anesthesia, but I was conscious of it somehow. Okay, 33. You should consider how by the influence of my illusory energy, these three states of the mind caused by the modes of nature have been artificially imagined to exist in me. Wow. Having definitely ascertained the truth of the soul, you should utilize the sharpened sword of knowledge acquired by logical reflection and from the instructions of sages and Vedic literatures to completely cut off the false ego which is the breeding ground of all doubts. All of you should then worship me who are situated within the heart. Okay, so here's the process. Again, we've got the sword of knowledge, and the sword of knowledge is going to cut off our false ego. And after we cut off the false ego, worship Krishna in the heart. This is the process of a Jnani who is a devotee. A devotee, Jnana Yoga. This is Jnana Yoga. You do all the analysis using your intelligence, and then, after you finish cutting the false ego, then you worship Krishna. Of course, for us, it happens automatically. Automatically. What is that verse where detachment comes automatically? It is in this 11th canto. Yeah, bhakti parishanu bhava viraktir. So it's simply by engaging in devotional service, you get bhakti, you get direct perception of the Lord, and you get detachment.
What verse?
11:2:42, I think. I think it's 11:2:42. Somebody can check it and see. It's in the sloka book, yeah. Verse 34, one should see the material world is a distinct illusion appearing in the mind, because material objects have an extremely flickering existence and are here today and gone tomorrow. It's 42, yeah? 42.
Can you repeat the translation?
One should see the material world is a distinct illusion appearing in the mind. It's all in your mind. Because material objects have an extremely flickering existence, are here today and gone tomorrow. They can be compared to the streaking red line created by whirling a fiery stick. The spirit soul by nature exists in the single state of pure consciousness. However, in this world, he appears in many different forms and stages of existence. The modes of nature divide the soul's consciousness into normal, wakefulness, dreaming, and dreamless sleep. All such varieties of perception, however, are actually maya and exist only like a dream. Yes. So wake up. Jeev Jago, Jeev Jago, Gora Chandabole. Lord Chaitanya is calling. How long will you sleep on the lap of the witch called Maya? Wake up, sleeping soul. Yes. And so Hansa Avatar is also saying the same thing. Wake up from your dream. You are not this mind, you are not this body, you are not this false ego. Okay. Purport. The Lord now describes an additional process for transcending the illusory interaction of the material mind and material sense objects. Okay, here's another way to use your intelligence to logically understand that you're not this body and mind. Lasa means jumping or dancing. Thus, Manasovi Lasam here indicates the material mind is jumping superficially from one conception of life to another. Our original consciousness, however, is one, Vijnanamekam. Therefore, once you carefully study the flickering, here today, gone tomorrow nature of the material world, detach oneself from the illusory variety of maya. So here's another thing to think about, how everything is temporary. This is how you use your intelligence to cultivate knowledge to get free. So now everybody sit comfortably. We're going to practice in the next verse. We're going to practice the meditation of the Sankhya philosophers. So, we have understood, okay, here it is. Having understood the temporary illusory nature of material things, okay, understood? Everybody's understood. It's all temporary, right? Next, thus having pulled one's vision away from illusion, okay, your vision is away. You've understood it's all temporary, now your vision is away from illusion. Next, one should remain without material desires. Okay, got that? No material desires? Good. Yes. Next, by experiencing the happiness of the soul, one should give up material speaking and activities. Okay, got that? No. Oh, that's too much. No talking and activities materially. Next. If sometimes one must observe the material world, okay, now it's all right, you can sometimes look at the world, one should remember it is not ultimate reality, and therefore one has given it up. Remember, when you look at the world, it's not reality, it's a dream. At least how you think it is. By such constant remembrance, up till the time of death, one will not again fall into illusion. Okay, just do this until the time of death, right? Easy? Good. Okay, so you can become a very first-class jnani. Our process is easier. We just chant Hare Krishna and automatically we will have the same result. But this is the process of the jnanis. This is what they do with their time. They're meditating, they're contemplating how it's illusion, it's temporary. But this is jnana yoga. This is jnana yoga. And then without Krishna, it's useless. You think, okay, I'm detached, it's illusion. Without Krishna, then okay, then what? Then what do I think about? Well, then, okay, I'm not thinking about this. I'm not thinking about it, but I shouldn't. And then what to think about? So the mind needs something to think about. So we chant Hare Krishna, we see the beautiful deities, we smell the incense, the flowers. So our process is very sublime. Ananda, kevala ananda kanda, and there's this pots of poison. Very difficult. Until death, you just remember it's all illusion. Right? Not easy. But they try to do this. This is their process. Purport. To maintain the material body, we cannot avoid eating and sleeping. Okay, here's one problem. In these and other ways, one will sometimes be forced to deal with the material world and the physical aspects of one's own body. What do those mayavadis do? They don't eat and they don't sleep? Of course they do.
They don't go to the bathroom?
Yeah. At such times, one should remember the material world is not actual reality. Therefore, one has given it up to become Krishna conscious. So now we're becoming jnana yogis. We're connecting our intelligence with Krishna. How can a jnani become Krishna conscious? Remember, it's not reality, and we've given it up, yes, same thing, we've given it up to become Krishna conscious. By such constant remembrance, by enjoying spiritual bliss within oneself, and by retiring from any material activities of the mind, speech, or body, one will not fall into material illusion. So this is a lot easier if Krishna is in the picture. If Krishna is there, then it's possible. Otherwise, it's not possible to do it. Shibhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur comments as follows. The living entity, while living in the external energy of the Lord, should give up any anxiety for sense gratification and should not act for his personal enjoyment. Rather, one should search out spiritual bliss through devotional service to the Supreme Lord. So we have to search for Krishna and happiness in his service. By reviving one's relationship with Lord Krishna, one will understand if one accepts any material object for one's personal enjoyment, attachment will inevitably develop, and thus one will be bewildered by illusion. So it's a process of fall down. Yes. And that will be in chapter 21, it's very similar. By gradually developing one's spiritual body, one will no longer desire to enjoy anything within the material world, because you have param dishtva nivartate, you have a higher taste. So if you have a higher taste, then you don't need to go back. You don't even think about the other things. 36, and here's how a person who's had a higher taste, how he feels. Just as a drunken man does not notice if he's wearing his coat or shirt. Similarly, one who is perfect in self-realization and who has thus achieved his eternal identity does not notice whether the temporary body is sitting or standing. Indeed, if by God's will the body is finished, or if by God's will he obtains a new body, a self-realized soul does not notice, just as a drunken man does not notice the situation of his outward dress. Does anyone have that experience that you didn't know if you were sitting or standing, probably in kirtan or something, you didn't know if you were where you were, sitting or standing? So which guru... remember from the 24 gurus that would be similar to this verse. I like to keep bringing us back to those gurus.
Python?
There's somebody I'm thinking of.
No.
He's not one of the 24 gurus. Yes, the arrow maker. He's so absorbed, he didn't notice the king and the emperor passing by. So that's how the devotee is. He's so absorbed, he doesn't know if he's sitting or standing or what's happening with his body. It's hard, he loses contact. And that's how the gopis were. They didn't know their names, their forms, or anything. They just forgot everything, thinking of Krishna. And another example is there of in the third canto of Devahuti, mm-hmm. that she achieved this. This is in verse 333:29. Because she was always absorbed in the thought of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, she was not aware that her hair was sometimes loosened or her garments were disarrayed. Purport. In this verse, the word Daivaguptam, protected by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is very significant. Once one surrenders unto the service of the Supreme Lord, the Lord takes charge of the maintenance of the devotee's body, and there is no need of anxiety for its protection. Said in second chapter, second canto of Bhagavatam, a fully surrendered soul has no anxiety about the maintenance of his body. Supreme Lord takes care of the maintenance of innumerable species of bodies. Therefore, one who fully engages in his service will not go unprotected by the Supreme Lord. Devahuti was naturally unmindful of the protection of her body, which was being taken care of by the Supreme Person. So there's an example. Someone who didn't, yeah.
Actually, the next verse is exactly the same as 328:38, and this verse is almost the same as 37.
Wow.
38 is the same as 37.
Oh, great.
And 37 is almost the same as this one, 36.
So these are very important verses, because they're going to be back in the final Jnana Yoga chapter of Uddhava Gita. So that's... what? 338. Oh, 338. I thought you said
328.
37. Oh, yeah, I didn't notice that. 38 is like 37.
And the previous ones are almost the same.
Previous ones are almost the same.
We switched a few words here.
Oh, they're matching.
Matching.
And what chapter is that?
28.
That's about the yogis? Yeah.
Kapila's instructions on the execution of devotional service.
Yeah, that is about the yogi's meditation, I think. Yeah, 328 is the yogi's meditation, I believe. No. 20, yeah, it could be. I think it's about the yogis. So, very good. We are getting reinforced here in our Jnana Yoga chapter from Kapila Dev's instruction to Sankhya. This is Sankhya, actually. Sankhya philosophy, this chapter. We're going to get a lot of Sankhya in this Uddhava Gita. A lot of Sankhya, a lot of Jnana. 37, the material body certainly moves under the control of supreme destiny and therefore must continue to live along with the senses and vital air as long as one's karma is in effect. A self-realized soul, however, who is awakened to the absolute reality and who is thus highly situated in the perfect stage of yoga will never again surrender to the material body and its manifold manifestations, knowing it to be just like a body visualized in a dream. So we have the body, and we have our karma coming, but we don't have to accept the karma. It's our choice. As devotees, we have the choice to accept or reject our karma. It may come to us in so many ways, but we don't have to accept it if we surrender to Krishna. Purport, although Lord Krishna recommended in the previous verse that a self-realized soul not give attention to the body, it is clear from the Lord's statement here, one should not foolishly starve or injure the body, but should patiently wait until the chain of one's previous fruit of work has completely exhausted himself. In the early days of Krishna consciousness, if you were sick, you were in Maya. It is a symptom of Maya if you are sick. And it was very difficult to be sick in the early days of Krishna consciousness. If you were sick, that was a real problem. Because you're in Maya. So therefore, you're not sick. You're not this body, so therefore you're not sick. So therefore, just forget that you're sick and go on with your service. That was the early days.
So Prabhupada addresses this in the fourth canto.
In the fourth canto, yeah.
One should not think that if one is sick, that one is in Maya.
Yeah, because it was going on. That's when he was writing fourth canto, that it was a big problem in ISKCON. That if just couldn't, you weren't allowed to be sick, you weren't allowed to be attached, you weren't allowed so many things. What to do? Yeah. But yes. So here it's true. You don't foolishly starve or injure your body. Take your medicine. Wait until the chain patiently wait until the chain of one's previous fruit of work has completely exhausted himself. The following doubt may then arise. If a Krishna conscious person pays proper attention to the maintenance of the body, is there danger of again becoming attached to it? Not if you're old. There's nothing there to enjoy. It's not pleasure. There's no sense gratification anymore. So you don't become attached too much. Lord Krishna here states, one who is highly elevated in Krishna consciousness, having understood Lord Krishna to be the actual Vastu, or reality, never again surrenders to the illusory identification with the material body, which is just like the body seen in a dream. So when you're old, prevention is better than cure. So you have to maintain. If you don't maintain your body, then the body naturally deteriorates. So it's better to go on a program of prevention, like yoga. Yoga, I find, is very preventative, very good prevention, or pranayama, or walking, or whatever, something you have to do, actually, with your body. Jumping in kirtan, if you can't dance, then go walking. Whatever you have to do. After you're 40 or 50, then you start getting the symptoms of old age. And it continues deteriorating faster and faster. And then if you neglect for one day, you see the difference. You don't do your yoga for one day and finished. 38. My dear brahmanas, I've now explained to you the confidential knowledge of Sankhya, by which one philosophically distinguishes matter from spirit, and of Ashtanga Yoga, by which one links up with the Supreme. So together, Sankhya and Yoga. So there is the philosophical knowledge, and then there's the connection with Krishna. Please understand that I am the Supreme Personality of Godhead Vishnu, and I have appeared before you desiring to explain your actual religious duties. Purport. To increase the faith of Lord Brahma's sons and establish the prestige of his teachings, Lord Krishna now formally identifies himself as Supreme Personality of Godhead Vishnu. Stated in Vedic literature, Yajnavai Vishnu. After explaining Sankhya and Ashtanga Yoga systems, the Lord clearly answers the original question of the sages. Who are you, sir? If it's Lord Brahma and his sons were enlightened by Lord Hamsa. So here's the summary. The difference between spirit and matter, Sankhya, how one might unite with him in yoga through higher realization and practice. So this is like a summary of the whole chapter that we're hearing about Sankhya Yoga. So we're analyzing the difference between matter and spirit. Remember some of the things we learned. And what is this analysis? What are some of the points of the analysis between matter and spirit that we heard today? How do they analyze? How do they use their intelligence to analyze? What do they see? Yes? Right. Observing the change of body.
And observing the consciousness.
Right. The continuity of consciousness through the three states. What is another way they use their intelligence? Yes? When the stick whirls around.
They get some red line, but it's not a fact.
Yeah, it's not a fact. It looks like the red line looks real, but it's not actually real. So what's another thing, how they use their intelligence? What do they do? They understand that it's illusion. Everything is illusion. That it's temporary. It's temporary. They remember, okay, it's temporary. It's an illusion. It's not me. I have nothing to do with this. But then you have to unite with Krishna. You have to think of Krishna. Then okay, then take shelter of Krishna. So that's the yoga part. So we have the Sankhya part, and then we have the yoga part. So they're in this chapter, they're united, Sankhya and yoga. So the Sankhya is the rigorous use of intelligence to separate yourself, to understand its illusion. And the yoga part is to, okay, after you've understood, then unite with Krishna. Be with Krishna. So verse 39, I'll read the Sanskrit. Aham yogasya sankasya satyasya tasachejasa parayanam dhishestashya kirtardamasya cha. O best of the brahmanas, please know that I am the supreme shelter of the yoga system, analytical knowledge, virtuous action, truthful religious principles, power, beauty, fame, and self-control. So yoga, he's a shelter of yoga, sankhya, satya, satyasya, actions, ritasya, religious principles, tejasa, parayanam, he's the shelter. Shriya, beauty, kirti, fame, and damasya, self-control. He's the shelter of all these things. Purport. No purport. I won't read the purport for this. Verse 40, again Sanskrit. Mam bhajanti guna sarve nugunam nirapekshakam suhidam priyamatmanam samya sangadayo guna. All superior transcendental qualities, such as being beyond the modes of nature, detached, the well-wisher, the most dear, the super-soul, equally situated everywhere and free from material entanglement, all such qualities, free from transformations of material qualities, find their shelter and worshipable object in me. So originally when he first answered the question, who are you? He said, he answered with a question. What his question was, what is the shelter of you and what is the shelter of me? So now he's explaining, it is me. I am the shelter of all these things. I am the shelter of you. I am the most dear, detached, all these qualities. They find their shelter in me. All these wonderful qualities. And I am the shelter of everything. So in the purport, it is said, because in the previous verse, Lord Krishna explained his exalted nature, the sons of Brahma might have slightly doubted the Lord's position, thinking they had detected some pride within the Lord's mind, because he's saying, I am everything. Yeah, only he can say that without any false ego, because he is everything. Therefore, they may have doubted the instructions they had just received from Lord Hamsa. Of course, he comes in the form of a swan. It might be hard. Anticipating any such reluctance, the Lord immediately clarifies the situation in the present verse. The Lord explains that unlike ordinary living entities, even up to the standard of Brahma, the Lord's transcendental body is not different from his eternal self and has no material qualities such as false egotism. The Lord's transcendental form is eternal, full of knowledge and bliss, and thus nirgunam, beyond the modes of nature. Because the Lord completely ignores the so-called enjoyment offered by loose energy, he is called nirapekshakam. Being the best well-wisher of his devotees, he is called suhridam. Priyam indicates the Lord is the supreme lovable object and that he establishes wonderful affectionate relationships with his devotees. Samya indicates the Lord is neutral and detached in all material situations. These and other exalted qualities find their shelter and worshipable object in the Lord, who does not take material designations into consideration, but awards his mercy to anyone who takes shelter of him. So isn't that wonderful for us? 41, Lord Krishna continued, my dear Uddhava, thus all the doubts of the sages headed by Sanak were destroyed by my words. Fully worshipping me with transcendental love and devotion, they chanted my glories with excellent hymns. And 42, the greatest of sages headed by Sanak Rishi thus perfectly worshipped and glorified me, and as Lord Brahma looked on, I returned to my own abode. Now Satyaraj picked up something very interesting. Do you see anything similar between these last two verses? He says there is a hint in these two verses about something. 41 and 42. I didn't pick it up, but he picked it up. There's a hint. There's two verses have something very similar in them. Yeah? Devotion.
Glorification.
Yes, glorification. Both of these verses talk about glorifying the Lord. So he says, this is a hint at the prescribed method for self-realization for this age, kirtan. I thought that was an interesting comment that I never would have caught, you know, but his mind is very... Because he's actually, in the West now, there's a big kirtan movement. And he's preaching to these non-devotees, to yogis, you know, yoga groups. And so kirtan, he's establishing kirtan. Actually, in this book also, he mentions kirtan quite a bit as very important. So it's nice. It's very nice. Okay, any questions or comments on this 13th chapter, Hamsa Avatar's instructions to the sages? Is that the name of the chapter? Anyway, whatever. And now you're all sufficiently worn out for your intelligence. Now, if you have a very active intelligence, now you know how to use it. Yes? Yeah. So how is sleep is a function of intelligence? In third canto, it was explained, because you weren't here with us for the whole trip. But in third canto, Kapiladeva explains that also. What is intelligence? Can you find that verse? That must be, I think, in 26th chapter, would it be? What is the intelligence? Third canto, chapter 26. There are four or five functions of the intelligence. And it may be explained in that purport. Because doubting is one. Doubting and discrimination, like factual ascertainment of things. Sleep is one function. So the one point that I noticed, if you don't get it, 3:26:30. Okay, what does it say?
Doubt,
misapprehension.
Correct
apprehension, just read it.
Memory and sleep.
Memory and sleep.
As determined by their different functions, are said to be the distinct characteristics of intelligence.
Distinct characteristics of intelligence. So what does it say anything about sleep in the purport?
Sleep is also necessary to keep the intelligence in working order. If there is no sleep, the brain cannot work nicely.
Okay, sleep is necessary to keep the intelligence in working order. If there's no sleep, the brain cannot work nicely.
In Bhagavad Gita, it is especially mentioned that persons who regulate eating, sleeping, and other necessities of the body in the proper proportion become very successful in the yoga process.
Yes. So if you regulate everything, and people who cannot sleep at night, if they cannot sleep for many, many nights, then the intelligence becomes very disturbed. It's very difficult for them. I mean, if you may not sleep for one night, okay. But if you don't sleep for a month... Yeah, even one night's enough. I mean, for me, when I was on the plane, there's a plane trip from here to New Zealand, and you leave here at 9 o'clock and go to the airport, and you don't sleep. You get on the plane at 1 or 2, and then you go to... This plane went to Dubai, the wrong direction, and then it went to Bangkok, and then and then it went to Sydney. So after the first night of no sleep, I was just like going mad. But I had asked devotees to pray for me, so then the prayers kicked in, and then I felt better. So the second day and second night came on the plane, and you don't arrive till 2 days after. You miss two nights of sleep, and you're just like completely. And I don't know how these sannyasis do it. One day here, 2 days here, 3 days here, and just no time zone. Your body just. Now, Prabhupada used to, what he would do is wherever he would land, he would take the time of that place and he would just do his activities. If it was like 4 in the morning, okay, time to translate. If it was 2 in the afternoon, okay, afternoon rest or lunch, 1 o'clock, okay, time for lunch. Sruti Kirti tells that one time it was time for lunch and the plane was taking off and Prabhupada said, okay, I want to eat now. And the plane was taking off, and Chudakirti was holding the bowls and the glasses, and Prabhupada was just calmly eating on the takeoff. and the air stewardess was saying, "Put your table up," and he didn't care. Just peacefully eating. Then as soon as they got level, then he stopped eating and put his tray away. And generally, he wouldn't follow their instructions, even if it was time not you couldn't go to the bathroom. He would go. He was oblivious to the place and the time, but he was very alert to when he landed. Then he would just take up the time of the place. But his servants couldn't do that. They were just, if they didn't sleep, they would have to sleep, and he couldn't understand, why are you in Maya? Why are you sleeping? But he was above it. Now what was your question? Function of intelligence, yeah. So the function of intelligence is sleep. So that we can understand that this consciousness of sleeping and dreaming, it's coming from the intelligence. And if you go behind the intelligence, what's behind the intelligence? Supersoul. Remembrance and forgetfulness is Super soul. And if you in the second canto of Bhagavatam, it's stated that super soul is the form, direction of intelligence, something like that. It's the form of intelligence, for direction, form and direction of intelligence. So, super soul, yeah, Paramatma. So sleep is a necessary, it's connected to intelligence. I see it. People who don't get their sleep properly, then it's very difficult. You know, Parvati, are you?
In 5 years.
It's very hard. Yeah?
They did experiments.
Yeah?
People who were regularly bereft of the dream stage.
Yeah.
They would go crazy.
I don't have that problem, boy.
And people, and normally about 7 days, after about 7 days without sleep, the person dies.
Yeah. Or goes crazy. Oh, dies without sleep.
Yeah,
I know.
Disturbed, they go crazy, and if they don't sleep, then they die.
Now, wasn't there? So did you tell a story years ago, or somebody did, about one radio commentator who decided he was going to stay online on the radio without sleep for 3 days, or as long as he could, as long as he could? Somebody, I heard that story in class. I thought I heard it in class. And you know, the second day he was okay. The third day he just ran out and started running down the street and shouting and being crazy. He just went crazy, went mad after 3 days. And so, yeah, without sleep, it's... yes?
Actually, at the time of this dictator Stalin, they were using this in doctors of experts, they were not giving to person
torture.
To sleep. They were putting cold water on him.
Oh.
So after a few days, the person was dying, actually, without sleeping. They tortured him.
Okay, we don't want to hear about this. Okay, yeah, that's all right. Yeah? Which verse? 326:30, right? 326:30. Misapprehension, incorrect apprehension. Correct apprehension and misapprehension. So, misunderstanding something, misperceiving, and understanding correctly. What does the purport say about that? Apprehension and misapprehension. Understanding something correctly. Like, you know, if you see a rope and you think it's a snake, that's misapprehension. Yeah, I mean, your intelligence is not working, or it's something. And doubt is also a function of intelligence, to doubt. We should also doubt. Why am I suffering? That is the doubt of an intelligent person. Why should I suffer in this world? Yeah, what else? Yeah, okay.
It says that one who continues to see different values and goals in life rather than seeing everything within me, then he is like a person who dreams being about being awake. So, in other words, I may think that I'm already in knowledge, situated in knowledge, that I know Krishna, that I'm seeing Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
My values may show that, in fact, I'm still conditioned. But how can one recognize this? Because when we dream that we are awake, it's usually very difficult to understand that we are not awake.
Mm-hmm.
When we dream that So if we are connected with some process, spiritual process, and we got some knowledge, we may think that we are already freed or that we are not illusioned. But
How to repeat that question? We may be in Krishna, in a spiritual process, and we may think we're awake, but we may still be conditioned. So how to know? How to know? Verse which?
30.
Okay. How to know? So what I would say in reply to that question, this is how you can test whether or not you are awake or not. When you perceive things, and when you in your behavior and in your actions, you the symptoms of the six symptoms of surrender are there, then you are awake. So when you make choices in your life, if you're choosing what is favorable for your service and what is unfavorable, then you're awake. And if you're making choices based on something else, what is favorable for my material life, or unfavorable for my comfort, for my material, then that's, you're sleeping. But at the same time, you may have to use your body for Krishna. So a choice may be, okay, I'm going to sleep on a bed because if I sleep on the floor, I'll catch cold. It's not that it's, you know, you have to see what's favorable for your health so you can maintain your body. So then you have to understand, okay, it may seem that you're being very luxurious by having a bed, but it might be something that's necessary for your devotional service and helpful and conducive for your devotional service. So then you have, that's where the intelligence comes in. Okay, is this favorable for my devotional service to Krishna? Is this unfavorable? So that's where I would say you can tell by those symptoms. Do I see Krishna? How much am I depending on Krishna? How much am I depending on other sources? How much am I being maintained by Krishna? How much am I being maintained by other? How much the humility is there? What's the one I'm missing? Faith? Gopti Jayavaranam Tata. Anukulyasa Sankalpa, Pratikulyasa Varjanam Rakshishatiti Vishvasa Gopti Jayavaranam Tata. Humility. Maintainer. Oh, and when your desires are non-different from Krishna. Okay, Krishna's plan, that's my plan. I don't have a separate plan. So my guru, my authorities, if they are approve of my plan, then your desires are with Krishna. So if you have an independent plan, then okay. And so I would say that by the six symptoms of surrender, then you can judge whether or not you're acting in a conditioned way, or controlled by your conditioned nature, or you're acting in a way that's transcendental or conducive to advancement. Yeah. Okay. Problem solving.
And it's doing that with attachment to the result.
Right.
Then in the
offer. Yeah, I know. Sometimes I have days like that where, you know, the day is, I'm thinking, okay, I'm, you know, it's, everything is going really great now. You know, I did this, but then it doesn't happen the way you think it's going to happen.
Just a practical point to see whether I'm conditioned or not.
Practical point is, okay, here's Lila Shuka's very practical points, and that is that if during your day you do some activity and you're attached to the result, at night you will become very tired.
You become what?
Tired. You know, you become exhausted by the fight between your mind and the results. Yeah, I mean, I had a day like that where, you know, I was thinking, wow, I'm going to get a lot of results today, but the opposite happened. And I wasted like 2 hours just for nothing, you know, thinking I was going to, you know, just happened. Yesterday, yes, Vanamali. I don't know, for me, my mind never stops. Even at night. I can't remember ever not having dreams. Anyway, I don't know what to say about that. Relief. Yeah. Yeah. Refreshed. If you let Krishna be the controller, it's refreshing. And if you don't, it's exhausting. Okay, here's some ways to test whether or not you're feeling conditioned. Yeah. Misapprehension.
Similar to illusion.
Yeah. Misapprehension. It's related to intelligence.
But also function of intelligence is misapprehension.
Function of intelligence, misapprehension. Yes, did you have something to say?
You know.
Yeah? Okay, so this is a practice of the yogis? Yeah. I don't want to catch it. I'd rather be asleep. Because I need the sleep. My problem is when the switch doesn't go, you know, sometimes.
It's a fact that it's very useful because if you catch that moment, then you definitely know you're not a gross body.
Yeah. Okay, if you catch that. Have you ever done that? I know some of us have practiced yoga in this, in our previous, before Krishna consciousness. Yeah, sometimes it's a very interesting state between sleep and in between, when, before you fall asleep. It's like half conscious. Sometimes, yeah, I am conscious in those. You're aware of the room. You're in the bed, and you're in a different level somewhere.
And the perception gradually shrinks.
Yeah.
The awareness just shrinks to a certain point.
And then you wake up. You say, "Oh, actually, I wasn't asleep. I was just half."
Intelligence should be a big existence.
Yeah, but I would rather, I need the, yeah, I'd rather not catch that point. Let it go.
The amazing thing is when you're the same, that's the point.
Yeah.
That you have the same identity.
Yeah, I'm a devotee. I mean, I dream, I'm with devotees, I'm doing devotional service. You know, so then, but then if, you know, then so, you know, get these dreams where you're getting chased or something, then as soon as you chant, then it's over. But if you try to do your own, you try to get away by your own power, then you just suffer. As soon as you realize, I'm helpless, I chant, and you start chanting, then then it's over. Then you're saved. You have to learn how to chant in your sleep.
Then you know it's a dream.
Yeah, you know. I know. You know. You figure it out and you start chanting. Well, Paramatma comes, but you can also practice to chant whenever you're in trouble. And then it'll happen when you're dreaming at the same... You know, if you do it in your life, then it'll carry in your dream. So if you're about to die in your dream, or if you're is having an accident, or someone's after you, chasing you, then you start chanting. Yeah, so it's the same thing. You practice in your life, and then in your dream you do it. I got an email from someone. You said in your class you can chant in your sleep. How do you learn how to do that? It's funny. I got an email from somebody. I said, you have to practice. I taught my son, who was 4 years old. He was getting attacked by ghosts, and he would describe them to me. I said, okay, now you have to chant in your sleep. When they come, you just chant. He said, oh, yeah, okay. And then he started chanting in his sleep, and he said, yeah, when I chant, then they just blow up. And they just explode, or they vanish. And he was telling me about that. And I said, yes, you chant in your sleep. That is, and then we'll be chanting at the time of death. Did you ever dream that you were dying in your sleep? Yeah, I had that dream many times. And then you chant. And then you just start chanting in your sleep. And you wake up and say, oh, it's okay. Yeah. If you chant Nishinga mantra, then it's really nice too. I mean, sometimes I chant Nishinga. Now I'm chanting more Nishinga mantra. It works. In life and in dream. In daydream and night dream. You can chant Nishinga mantra and Nishinga will protect you. It's by practice. Just practice in this life. We chant in our sleep. We chant at time of death. And if we forget Krishna, Krishna doesn't forget us. We have to practice in this life. We have to chant as much as possible. So then if we serve the holy name, then our master won't forget us. Even if we forget at the time of death, then Krishna won't forget us. Okay? All glories to Srila Prabhupada.